You're at a step. We're holding today on Daf Tzadik Vav, Shavuot Tov. And I think it might be worthwhile for us just to take a very brief review of the elements of the technical definition of Kalim that we've been dealing with. To make things simple, we've only been dealing with the technical definitions of a Kli Cheres. Thank heavens we don't have to talk about everything else. Because, of course, we have a lot of different things to worry about then. And thank heavens we're only talking about Tuma, standard Tumas Kalim, as opposed to Mishka B'Moshe, Midrash, and so on. So we don't have to worry about that. So we can take it very simply. The reason that we got into this here, Bichlal, other than the overall pattern of using the Sefer Shabbat for Dinei Tumah, as I pointed out earlier, this is a consistent theme throughout the Sefer, constantly comparing Dinei of Tumah to Shabbat. But in any event, the reason we got into it over here was simply because we were talking about what the shir is in terms of a atzitz nakuv when it comes to tolesh. When is something planted in a container that has a hole in it? There are two completely different issues, obviously, that need to be taken into consideration there. One is, what is the shear of the hole in order to allow nourishment to come into the thing, considered to be mechubar to the karka? And then we can talk about what is the shear of a break, hole in the sense of a break, in that kli, to take away its din kli, in which case it would be considered to be mechubar ala karka, even according to Rabbi Shimon, who generally holds that something in a kli, even with a hole in it, is not considered mechubar. The karka would have to destroy the kli, according to Rabbi Shimon, in order to make it something that you would be chayev on Shabbos for Toleshan. We came out the case over there was talking about that you had a hole in it in the side, in which case it wouldn't even be makabel revius in it. Okay. So then we started talking, once we brought it up, Rava mentioned that there are five technical definitions about a kli. Of course, they're not all in terms of tumah, obviously. We've already met one, which we haven't really assigned a value to, which is not particularly Nogeh Kli Cheres or the other Kli, which is why it doesn't appear here, which is what is the size of the hole that is needed in order to consider the nourishment coming up through the hole into the ground. Basically, we didn't talk about that yet, but we did talk about other issues. We talked about the shear of a Kli to make it suitable to be Makabo, the Mei Parah, which has nothing to do with Tumah V'Tahara, just the Mei Chatat. Well, there it says in Mayim Chayim Al Keli. That was the first real shear of a true Kli Cheres. But there was an earlier shear for usages of shards, and that was called Gistra. That's a side, that is a din in terms of Tumah V'Tahara. Shards, particularly as opposed to simply broken kalim, are used to plug up holes or to support things and so on. So they are, if they're used for mixing glue or something like that, you throw them out if they have the slightest defect. I mean, even if they'll just leak out some water in it, you're going to throw them out. No point in keeping a shard. As Gemara is going to tell us today, in omrim ave gistra la gistra, we're going to now plug up the hole in the gistra. That's ridiculous. The whole point was that it's just an easy throwaway thing. I mean, you have a little hole in a, even the slightest hole in a disposable cup, you obviously don't keep the cup, so take on another cup. Okay, so that was the gistra. We said, even if it leaks. Then the next most common was in terms of the paras chatas, which was if it's a crack in which mashke can come in. If mashke can come in, it's already not considered to be a kli, even in terms of the din of the Mayim Chayim El Keli. Then we talked about the next case, which was the Hechsher Zroim. Now the Hechsher Zroim, what we had so far was Kishorish Katan. We'll see more about, we haven't really gotten into that, but as I said, we'll look at it into it today. But Shorish Katan, in other words, if it's large enough for a root to make its way out, then it's considered to be a hole. Not nothing to do with the Tzaira, but in terms of the halacha of being Mechuber Alakarka, which even according to the shitas that darshan the extra pasuk, Rabbi Shimon, you know, where the Torah said it has to be completely asher yizareya, and so normally the Gavi Shabbos, where he viewed it to be disconnected from the ground, The kula, he views it as being connected to the ground because of the extra pasuk. But one shear is connected to the ground. The din of shorish katan. And of course, anybody else who's going to tell us the nafkamina between, in general, din of a kli that is a flower pot will basically be summed up on that same shear. What is a flower pot that's snorkeled for whatever you happen to hold is the shear of a shorish katan. Then we talk about tuma, finally, the regular din of tuma. Regular din of tuma in a kli cheres is if it's able to hold zeitim, it's a kli. Not able to hold zeitim, it's not a kli. Then we went down a level and we talked about what is the shear of a kli in terms of being miyachid for some other use, which the contents would be larger even than the zeitim, in which case it would be makabel tuma even if zeitim would fall out. And we said, look, the absolute maximum size hole that we will tolerate for such a thing is the size of a rimon. If it's got a bigger hole than a rimon, it's not a kli legabe kabbalah stuma. However, it still is a kli legabe the din of being matzil ochun b'tzamit patil, which means that even though it's broken, in order for something to become tame inside of an ohel hamed, it always has to be in that ohel hamed. Now, if I take something that's makabel tuma, let's say I take a ring, and I put all kinds of junk around it, I put concrete around it, and I protect it, and so on and so forth. Bring it into the ohel hamed. Still makabel tuma, because concrete's not going to be chotzeitz b'tzamit tuma. So the Torah, however, did say there's a very special case of a kli cheres, in which case, where you have the, let's say, a ring inside of a kli cheres, assuming it's mukab tzamit patil, it's tahor. On what level is it still considered to be mukav tzamit patil in the sense of it's not being just a mass of material but still functioning as a kli in terms of the hatzalah of the tabat? That's the lowest level that we're talking about. And over there was ruba. Because we can't say that something that is essentially a utensil, it's not usable for its purposes of use, which is important when it comes to tumah v'tahara. That's what defines a kli, is its instrumental use. That's the meaning of kli legabi tuma v'tahara. But that's not the meaning of kli when it comes to not being in the ohel hamed. Obviously, there's no reason to apply those standards to that. There, as long as it's mostly in one piece, mostly in one piece means that if I put it tzamit patil alav, meaning, according to Rashi anyway, meaning on the top of it, which is normally the entrance way into the kli, then the fact that it's inside of an ohel hamed becomes now irrelevant to anything inside of it, because it defines a separate space. It's basically a space definition rather than a kli definition. It defines a separate space. You'll say, but what about the hole? Why doesn't the tumah come in through the hole? A kli cheres, since it still has a shem of a kli to define its space, is only mekabel tumah through its opening, not through a hole. That's Rashi's approach. The Rabbeinu Tam Lomais argues on that and holds that the tzamit patil has to be over the hole as well. But that's a side issue, really, in terms of our sugya. Those were the dargas of kli, the various types of kelim that we had spoken about. And it's very good to hear that there's no such thing as a kli is a kli is a kli. Obviously, when it comes to different purposes, the Torah defines it based on different criteria, depending on what fits that particular purpose. So when it comes to tumah v'tahara, the purpose is instrument. When it comes to the mechatas, the purpose is the isolation of a liquid. When it comes to the hatzalah in an ohel hamed, the purpose is defining a separate space. When it comes to the question of whether it's considered to be an atzitz nakuv, the purpose is to be largely left to allow nutrition and for a plant. Obviously, the different criteria yield us separate values when it comes to halacha l'maaseh. That's what we had learned on Friday, Erev Shabbos. Today, we have Rav Asi's maimer. We had closed on Friday with the machlokas, about whether there's also a sheet that holds when it comes to mukam tzamit patil. It depends on how large it is, that actually it's a question of what comes first, is the way Tosfos learns. In other words, if it's so small that the rov comes before the size of a breaking to the Yahutzat Rimon, then Rove indeed is the definition, as Rava had said earlier. But if it's a large Kli, then once it gets the size of Botzi Rimon, then even if it's not Rove, that was the Shita, closing Shita on Erev Shabbos. Om Rav Asi, now the top line on Tzadik Vav. Om Rav Asi Shonim, Kli Cheresh Yuro, Bekones Mashka, Velo Omru, Notzi Mashka, Eleinin Gistra Bilvat. What we do learn is that the minimum that is required to destroy a Kli Cheres for any purposes at all, if somebody's going to tell you the range of values of Kli Cheres is from Motzi Mashke to Rubo, he's wrong. The range is from Kones Mashke to Rubo. Now I know you're going to ask me, but what about Gistra? What about a Gistra's becomes, now loses its shame of Kli? Even b'motzi mashka, that's very true, but that's not a din in Kli Cheres. That's a din in Gistra. Lo omru motzi mashka, elo le'in in Gistra bilvad. It's important to know what the range is. And the reasoning over there, it's okay, it's a different reasoning, because Gistra has its own sense of usage. My time, omru marzurtra bereder of nachra, l'fisha'in omrim, ave Gistra le Gistra. It becomes an absurdity. You're going to say, I'm willing to keep a broken Kli because I can always prop it up with a shard or stop it up with something. I'm certainly not going to say, let's bring another shard to stop this shard from leaking. It would be ridiculous. Throw out the shard, bring another shard. Why would I bring a Gistra le Gistra? So the moment it's not fully usable, dump it.
What
is a Gistra? A Gistra is a shard, a completely broken piece of Kli. Omra Ula, Pligi Batrea Moroi B'Maharova, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yavin, and Rabbi Yosef Bar Zavda. Now, in the Yerushalmi, we find a machlokas. Wechad omer kemotzi rimon. One man, the Omar, says, now Rashi learns what it says, pligi ba. He means, when it comes to the sugya of Heksher Zroyim, where we just sort of tossed out a value, and we didn't really get into the dinim of the kli value of it. So, one man, the Omar, says there, that it's kemotzi rimon is necessary in order to make it an atzitz nakuv. V'chad omer kishoresh katan, which was the shir that we had mentioned, v'simanecha echad hamarbe v'echad hamamit. The way to remember it is that these are extremes. Because basically, I mean, we ignored all the middle values completely. And one of them is saying, take the smallest amount. Forget about the Kones Mashka, the Motzi Mashka, and so on. Just talk about the smallest possible amount and the largest possible amount. That turns out, it's very strange to find in a machlokas. So in other words, obviously roots can find their way out, you know, basically in anything. That's what we're saying. Echad Amarbe, meaning the largest shear was Kemotzi Rimon. Echad Amamit, the smallest shear was Kishoresh Katan. And that's how to remember that the two shitas, I mean, obviously we don't know who said what anyway, so we can't make a simon for that. But the two shitas did not involve any of the middle values that had been mentioned earlier.
You think Shoresh Katan is smaller than Kones?
No, in other words, he's learning that we can, Rashi says, Beferish, Shir of Kones Mashke is a Shir Beinani. Between.
Not what we said before.
Yeah, because we didn't have the meaning of Shoresh Katan. At this point, now the Gemara is making it clear. That's the point of Simit, exactly.
Is Kodesh Mashke bigger than Motzi Mashke?
Kodesh Mashke is bigger than Motzi Mashke, right. Yeah.
Same hole, it looks like.
No. There's a different vowel. You've never tried this? You've never seen the difference between Kodesh Mashke and Motzi Mashke? That's interesting. If you have a small hole, and you have a liquid inside, first of all, the liquid will not necessarily go out through a small hole either, because there's surface tension up to a point at which the surface tension maintains the liquid inside, just like it does when it goes over the top of your becher, right? It's going over the top. You know, you just made Havdalah. I'm sure you tried to make the wine, not the wine, but you probably used beer. The beer goes over the side of the becher, yeah? That's surface tension. There's a molecular attraction that's almost like a surface. So it won't even go out through a hole. However, when you put a certain amount of water in it, the pressure of the water as opposed to the outside where there's no water pressure, forces the water out. But in order to let the water come in, if you set this thing sitting and there's water outside of it, the surface tension prevents the water from coming in because there's no water pressure. Obviously, unless you're forcing this thing down into, that's not what's called kanyismashka. Kanyismashka means without any pressure, you have this thing, it's damp outside, where is the water going to get in? And lav dafka. So here, Enochinam, you know, as Rashi says, Beferish, so the deal over here is the Kenes Mashka is considered to be the in between the two values. Again, from the presentation, as Ramoti pointed out, from the presentation before, it was Mashma, that Sharish Katan could have meant the middle, some middle thing, a larger one. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi, by the way. He doesn't say that we're talking about Hechsher Zrayim at all. He learns that the Shorish Katan that was said before, I leave it to everybody's a Mishnah, the Feirish Lagabi, the Dinim of Hechsher Zrayim. And he learns that they're arguing over here about Mukav Tzemik Patil, which is really a big Kiddush, that there's a Mandiyamar who holds that Kishorish Katan would be the Shir of its being not defining a space to itself, which is a little bit strange. Why in the world that Shir would be meaningful in terms of Mukav Tzamit Patil? But anyway, as we learned it, Alpi Rashi. Omer of Chinan Bar Kahana Bishmei Rabbi Eliezer Klicheret Shiuro Kamotzi Zeitim. Now, this is no big Kiddush because, I mean, we saw this before. We know it's actually Beferish of Mishnah. But the point that he's making is that Rava, who claims that there's an additional shear, which is if you took a klicheres and were miyachid for larger things than zeit, like rimonim. Remember, so that was the highest break that we needed to be defined before tzamit patil was kemotzi rimonim. The point of here is that Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with that. Once it's considered to be broken because it's motzi zeitim, you cannot be meyachidit for anything. It's but la daite, which explains the next piece of your markashisha, berei de rabba misayemba mishmei de Rebbe Eliezer. He says, let me just tell you what I heard, the end of Rebbe Eliezer's statement, in order to make sure that you don't have misunderstanding here. That at that point, that a kli cheres is broken to allow zeitim to escape through the break, at that point, it might as well be klei glalim, klei avanim, klei adama, she'en mekablim tumah. You can take a kli evan and say, I want to use this as my washing cup. It ain't going to be mekabel tumah. It has nothing to do with its use. It's the type of material that will not be mekabel tumah. A kli cheres, which is broken to the point of motzi zeitim, might as well be made out of avanim. So what is he saying? I disagree entirely with Rav. There's no such thing as being miyachid, a broken klicheres, for use of something larger than zeitim. It's batla, and therefore it's no longer mekabel tumah at all. She'inam mekablim tumah, lo midivrei Torah, v'lo midivrei sofrim. Just forget about it. When it comes to the question of kli in terms of defining an internal space, which is a different issue, and where that comes up is tzamit patil. There, in Achidami, the inyan samit patil, achi fachet rubo. So I don't see any need to mention a shir of kamotzi rimon at all. If it's talking about a samit patil, it's rov. If it's talking about the shir of eklicherzik abola tuma, the most you can ever talk about, even if you try to be miyachidit for something else, is kamotzi zeitim. Hadron alok hamatznia. Back to Hutzah. Hazorek. Now, of course, we spoke about Hutzah in terms of carrying. We didn't talk much about throwing. Well, we're going to get to handing. Let's start with throwing. Hazorek mirushut hayachid l'rushut harabim. Or mirushut harabim l'rushut hayachid. Chayat. Somebody throws. It's also considered to be an act of Hutzah. Just as if he had picked it up and carried it and set it down. How about Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaYachid, with a Rishut HaRabim Be'emza? Now, this was something that we explored early on in the Masechta, when we were talking about the dinim of Kalucha Kamisha Luncha, or whether Mahalif Gomed, you remember all of those sugyas, or Rebbe's case of throwing through a ball that gets thrown through a window, somebody's living room window goes to the house and out the other window into the backyard and so on. All of these cases we explored briefly, only because we were interested in determining what's considered to be Akir and Hanocha. Over here, we're interested in talking about not the Akir and Hanocha issues, as much as what is the Derech of Hotza'ah. How far do we take this category called Hotza'ah when it comes to Shabbos? So if you have Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabim Be'emza, and here's the famous Rabbi Akiva we spoke about earlier. Rabbi Akiva is Mechayev, and again, you'll remember back from the first parak, that one way of understanding Rabbi Akiva's being Chayev is that it would have to be talking about that it's within 10 Tvachim of the ground. And the reason that Rabbi Akiva is Mechayev is because of the halacha called Kluta K'mishun Chadanya. Anything that is within the space that's defined by Rashut, for all intents and purposes, is viewed as standing still in that Rashut. It does not have to be physically defined as standing still. In other words, because basically there's one quanta of time, so to speak, in which it's standing still. That's all that I care about. And therefore I would be Mechayev. In which case, according to Rabbi Akiva, if you hold Kluta Kamishon Gadamya, when I throw from Rashut HaYachid into Rashut HaRabim, it stops. Yes, it stops for perhaps only a quanta of time, so to speak, in this whole Zeno issue, which is becoming very nogea, lochlamais and quantum mechanics, the question of whether there are such things as minimal times, in which case it's standing still in terms of that. So I'm chayim once for the hachnosa, for the hotzah in the Rishus HaRabim, and now if it continues to move from Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid, I'm now chayim again for the Hachnasa and the Rishut HaYachid. So according to Rabbi Akiva, if I'm going to take this approach, it's going to be Mechayev you twice. Echas Mishum Hatzah, Echas Mishum Hachnasa, right? Because I did two separate acts. I did an act of Hatzah and I did an act of Hachnasa. Okay. There was another explanation, which you'll recall, and which indeed tomorrow we're going to review again in the Gemara, what the possibilities are in Rabbi Akiva. The other possibility is that actually Rabbi Akiva was not talking about a case which is within 10 tvachim of the ground in Rishut HaRabim, because above Atzara Tvachim there's no extension of Rishut HaRabim Lamala, therefore you couldn't possibly say Kluta K'mishun Chadanya, because even when it's still, so to speak, in that strobe shot of the bullet, it was standing still in a Mokum Ptur, wouldn't be Mechayev you. Certainly wasn't on the ground. What then would the logic of Rabbi Akiva be according to this approach? The logic would be that it is similar to a brand new halacha that we've never even met yet, that has a whole different moker in the Mishkan, which is a new type of hotza'ah called hoshata. And hoshata is learned, hoshata means passing something from one rishus to another. And hoshata, or moshit, is something that we have a specific case in the Mishkan that we learn out from, which was the wagons in the Mishkan when they were loading it up and passing from wagon to wagon. And according to Rabbi Akiva, Zorek should not be any less than passing something. So I throw something, essentially the same thing as passing it. Since in the Torah there's a marker to a type of Hotzah that's called passing from one Rishut HaYachid to another Rishut HaYachid through Rishut HaRabim, there is therefore a Zorek from one Rishut HaYachid to another Rishut HaYachid through Rishut HaRabim. It has nothing to do with Kluta K'mishu and Chadamia whatsoever. That was the other approach.
The passing, is it airport for a second?
Sorry?
What? In the passing, is it airborne at all between the wagons, or is it totally...
What, in the motion?
Yes.
No, it's always held by somebody. That's not called airborne. Something that's held is not airborne. So Rabbi Akiva, in that case, is Mechayeh. The Chachamim are poaching. Again, two different approaches. The Machlokas has to do with Kluta K'mishun Chadamia, and it's talking about beneath them talking, or the Machlokas has to do with Yalfinan Zorek Mimoshit, and it would be talking about the Malam Yasarat, even the Malam Yasarat. Ketzad. Now, this Ketzad is very problematic, because the Ketzad as we have it describes a case of 10 tefachim above Rosh Hashanah Rabbeinu, which is talking about porches that are jutting out over the Rosh Hashanah Rabbeinu. And as Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, there are actually two Yirsaot in this Mishnah that the Yerushalmi speaks out. If we learn that the Machloket Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is a Machloket of whether Yalfin and Zorek be Moshit, we could say Ketzad. If the Machloket has to do with Kluta Kamishon and Kadanya, then the following case, which is a discussion of passing from one porch to another in Rosh Hashanah Rabbeinu, is irrelevant to the aforementioned beginning of the Mishnah, and therefore couldn't possibly say Ketzad. So according to that Maniyamar, the Mishnah does not have the word Ketzad in it. So don't let the Ketzad prejudice you about how to understand the opening, because it may be that this case is not part of the Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbanan at all. So, okay, if we read the Ketzad, so then we'll make the assumption that the Machlokas is whether we learn out Zrika from Hoshata. So Ketzad, when I am talking about the type of Zrika that I am talking about, which is based on Hoshata, or a new halacha, Shtei Gezuz Traot, Zukeneged Zu, Bershut Rabbi. You have two Gezuz Traot, which are different from Mir Pasot, in the simple sense that they jut out over the street. Whereas a mirpesa could be even on the same level as the wall of the house, which is very common. So we call this a gezustra. You have two of these gezustraot. Now, assuming that you've got a gezustra on one side of the street and gezustra on the other side of the street, you throw now from one gezustra to the other gezustra. In such a case, if it's zo keneged zo, Rishut Rabbi, there is nobody who holds that that's chayav. Ha moshit vehazorek mizola zovet patur. There's nothing to discuss about kluta kemishon chadamya, because we can assume that this case is talking about a porch that's above ten tefachim, since it's jutting out over the Rosh Hashanah. There's nothing to discuss in terms of the hoshata, because the hoshata, as it occurred, we'll see in the Gemara, as it occurred in the Mishkan, occurred through the parking of the four agalot, or these massive Mack trucks that were used to carry the krashim of the Mishkan. And we learn later on in the Gemara that they parked them, they would drive side by side, pull up two of them in front of the Mishkan, pull up two behind them, and not have them surrounding the Mishkan. And then they would pass up as they took down the krashim of the Mishkan. They would hand up the krashim to the people on the first truck. Those people would then pass it over the distance between the two, pass it to the people that were standing on the other truck, and they would stack it up on that truck, and then when those were filled, they would start stacking on the two in front. Right? So that means that you passed it over from a truck, which is a Rishut HaYachid, over the Rishut HaRabim, into another truck. But the Rishut HaRabim was defined in the Mishkan, was defined in the Midbar, by the direction of travel. It's not the entire Midbar is the Rishut HaRabim. That area which was used for travel is the Rishut HaRabim. Which means that by definition, if I've got these wagons, one behind the other, and they're traveling, then the Rishut HaRabim is defined lengthwise by the direction of the travel of those agalot. In which case, the only situation we have that we can pattern on the Midbar, the Mishkan, is passing along the length of Rishut HaRabim from one of these trucks to the other. There was never a case when anybody would pass from Rishut HaYachid across Rishut HaRabim, but rather only along the length of the Rishut HaRabim. Therefore, says the Mishnah, and Tosis explains consistently throughout the Masechta, that this is all because Hotzah is counterintuitive. Obviously, if we could view Hotzah the way we viewed any other malacha, all of this would be absolutely nonsensical. Have you ever heard of a malacha being defined by whether you're traveling lengthwise or widthwise? But it's just ridiculous. And why we would need a pasuk for saying that taking something in is different than taking something out, or if you're an ani standing outside, you're different than if you're a balabayit standing inside. I mean, all of that is completely irrelevant to any other malacha. But that's because positions are obviously irrelevant, and the mode of passing is obviously irrelevant because they're outside of the object, and every other malacha is inside the object. He finds an impact on the object. Since the Torah over here creates a new concept of malacha, in which the act, as opposed to the impact on the object, is defined by the interrelationship of an object to its coordinates, to its surroundings, we have no idea how far to take that. We can't base the standard type of Toda Malacha orientation that we have on it. Look, if you're telling me that it has something to do with, I don't know, the Mechitzot around it, so what's the difference if I take from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaYachid, or if I take from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut Rabbein? Tell me that. There's no difference, but there is. There's no chiyuv of carrying from one house into the next house, but there is a chiyuv of carrying from one house into the street. Now, if we could simply logically define that as some change in the object, fine, then we wouldn't have a problem with the whole issue of Hotzah. Since we can't logically define it, we need to attempt to figure out what precisely it is that the Torah is being mocked on here in the definition of this malacha. And until we have sufficient information, we can't simply say, well, isn't it sort of the same? For other malachas, you could say, isn't it sort of the same? For Hotzah, you can't say, isn't it sort of the same? And that was Tosfos Yesod, malacha gu'ahi. It's a lousy malacha. There's no really way of figuring out exactly what case would be included without a remez in the Torah for this case itself. Yes, Abba?
What's the space between two wagons side by side that the Amos required?
We're going to get into that in very excruciating detail in this parak. I must tell you, by the way, that there is the approach that we've taken in the Mishnah is the approach of almost all the Rishonim. It's Rashi's approach over here. There is an interesting approach by Rav Haigon, who says that he arrived at this approach with great pains, and don't just throw it out. I think it's probably a play on words of Hazorik. Anyway, so he says it took me great pains going through the sugya, and the correct approach is that it has nothing to do whether it's side by side on Rishut Rabbein or whether it's across Rishut Rabbein. It has to do with what is considered nearby enough to be in control of something that you are being moshit and handing it into another person's hand. I'm not going to go into that detail, but I just want you to know that there is a completely different approach to the circuit. Now, let me also point out a serious issue that we've got with this, that the Gemara doesn't go into, but that Tosfos did go into in the beginning of the Masech. How could a moshit possibly be chayev if there's two people that are involved? In other words, look, we had the case in the Mishnah, in the opening of the parak, right? I mean, and what's amazing is that the Yerushalmi says, Beferish, the only time they're chayav on Moshe is if there's two people involved. But if you would be Moshe something and set it down on the floor and shove it into the other porch, it would be potter. And the Yerushalmi itself asks this question. Why don't you make up your mind? All over you're saying if two people do it, it's less of a malacha. And here you're saying if two people do it, it's the only way to do the malacha. For heaven's sake! So Tosfos says, okay, but that does seem to say that if you have over here a problem of shtayim shasa'ul, it's going to be chayim. And the Yerushalmi just says, well, that's the derech of Moshe. So Tosfos, who cares if it's the derech of Moshe? We can have many examples of things that were done, namely Hotzah v'achnasa itself. It's a very important nekuda. Is this a given? The Mishnah saying there was something in the Mishnah called Levim passing things from Rishus Rabbi? Absolutely. Can you explain to me then why it is that in Erevin and here in Shabbos and on the basis we'll see, we've already discussed it many times, we need a posik to prove that the Torah asked Hotzah from Al Yotzi Ish Mimakomo Al Yotzi Vidash Al Yotzi, when they ran out of the need for additional materials, which we're going to darshan here. What do I need that for? There's a case where the Levium transferred from one rishus to the other, and there you go. There's obviously such a thing as a Hotzah. As a matter of fact, why isn't that the Abba Malacha Moshit? Again, Tosfos explains, I understand. And why don't you say that anybody wearing a purple hat is considered to be a malacha, because somebody wore a purple hat in the Mishkan. And obviously, if we have no reason to suspect that such a thing is significant, why are we going to focus on it just because it's in the Mishkan? If it were changing something and it was consistent that we could view it as a malacha, fine. You first have to tell me there exists such a malacha in the pasuk. Then you could come along and tell me that this is one of them. How do you know it's one of them? Because it appears in the Mishkan. Tainus Taisus on that Yerushalmi. If the Torah says ba'asota, it means the Torah tells you two people doing the malacha is proper. What possible meaning is there to say, well, but in the, after all, what can you do? I mean, Hoshatat took place by two people in the Mishkan, so I guess it's a malacha. That's ridiculous, says Taisus. You might as well say, as our dear president asked, as a matter of fact, last week, you might as well say that because the Levim were carrying the Arayin on more than one person, so that is a proof that Shnayim Shasa'u are Chayovim, because we find it in the Mishkan. What kind of proof is that? Maybe you're not Chayov on that case. I mean, so what? Bring me a Raya from the... So it's, if it says Ba'asotasa, because I happen to find the case in the Mishkan where two people are involved, therefore you're Chayov, it makes no sense at all. Therefore, Tosus early on in the Masechet, Bav Gimel, came to the conclusion that the idea of Moshit, even though there's another person involved, does not mean that he grabs it from your hand. It's not the case of the Ani and the Balabayik or your Potter, because you just held it there and he took it out of your hand. Moshit means that you put it on his hand. Just if I put it on his hand, what's the difference between that and putting it on the ground? That's the way it is, because that's the way it was done. That's what's considered to be, so to speak, the equivalent of a hanach when it comes to Hoshata. If so, as Tosfos on himself, so then why did the Yerushalmi ask? Hey, all over you say if two people do it, it's not chayav, and here you say, Tosfos says, that's not the point. The point that the Yerushalmi was making is not that it violates Ba'asota, but that it tends towards a violation of Shnayim Ba'asota. In other words, does it make sense to say that it's significant to limit Hoshata Barnea to a case where there's two people, if normally the involvement of another person, if anything, lessens the Chiyuv? I agreed that in this particular case it doesn't technically destroy the Chiyuv, but it certainly tends in the direction of making less reasonable to be Chiyuv, not more reasonable. That's the Gemara's Kasha in Yerushalmi. It was not saying that it's a violation of Basota. If it were, then Erkinami, we wouldn't be able to learn out of these cases. You see, because of this, because we have so much confusion in how to define, the Gemara took for granted that the meaning of Hotzah is Hotzah and not Hachnosa. Because the Gemara takes for granted that it's walking and not Hoshata. Because the Gemara has to find a basis for Zurika as opposed to walking, and so on and so forth. It's clear that for some reason we are rejecting the case in our Mishnah as the model for Hotzah. That's absolutely clear. And therefore, Tosfos has got to find the reason for that, his idea of Malach Hotzah Malach Gerua, and applies it across the board to answer all of these questions, where the Gemara is not satisfied with finding it in the Mishkan, needs to have a posse. But once having the pasuk, now tries to figure out what things might be still included under the general rubric of Hotzah. I will add that Tosfos on Daf Beis, Tosfos on Daf Beis pointed out that the Gemara needs rayas when it comes to Hotzah, that the malacha includes toldos, that hachnas is a tolda for Hotzah. For no other malacha do we need riots? It's a simple idea. Why is it that all of these other cases, Zorek is a tolda, Hoshata is a tolda, why is it that for every other malacha we don't need psukim and complicated sforas and models in order to make something a tolda, and for this we do? Again, it's obvious there's something strange about it, so we have no right to extend the case as given unless we have clear-cut indications in a person that this too is included. In which case you would say, and this is fascinating because of it, we find consistently throughout both Rashi and Tosfos, by other malachas, the tolda is the tolda because of its similarity to the malacha, and it's learned out of that similarity. In other words, if I asked you 2 days ago, somebody who milks, what is he chayav on? And you say, chayav mishum mefarek. And I tell you, meaning dash. Yes, of course, meaning dash. Isn't that the concept of mefarek? And you'll say, well, I don't know, maybe the Torah means dash if it's only on tfu or whatever. Nobody suggested that. If I would have told you, why isn't it a different malach? I said, why is it a different, why would it be? And yet, when it comes to otsah, Rashi is constantly saying, and where else would we put hachnasa if not under hotzah? Where else would we put the din of hoshot if not under hotzah? What do you mean, we had avamina maybe to put it under mevashel? Because that's the point. We're not learning it out of hotzah the way we do with the standard model in the Mishkan. So therefore, even once I bring a raya from the Torah, there is such a thing. Even when I find the model for it in the Mishkan that there was such a thing, I still need to say, so what is it? Does it fit somewhere? Well, the closest thing it fits to is Otsah. But I'm still not ready to put myself out on a limb and say, it is Otsah. But being as I know there's only these 39 malachas, where are you going to fit it? Throw it into a tolda of Otsah, which is a very strange way of doing things, you must admit. So now, says the Mishnah, therefore, if you have shtei gezuzot, so if they're facing each other across Rishut HaRabim, ha-moshit v'amoz azorek mizolazo patur. Hayu shteihem b'diuta achat, however, if they're along the same line, then ha-moshit chayav, that's a given, we'll see how we learn that out, v'azorek patur, now this might not be true alibid Rabbi Akiva if Rabbi Akiva was learning Zorek Mimoshi. It could be true alibid Rabbi Akiva if Rabbi Akiva's only reasoning was because Klutik Mishun Chadamya, and in this case where we're talking about Lamala Miyasaret Vachy, Klutik Mishun Chadamya is not an issue. So maybe even Rabbi Akiva agrees to this, right? That the Zorek would be Patur. And the reason that he's Chayim, this is the way it was done. How is that? Shtei agalot, you have two wagons, one behind the other, Bereshut HaRabim. And what they did is, they would be moshitin ha-krashim mizolazo. They would pass the krashim from the ground to the guy in the agala, who would promptly pass it to the agala behind him, and that was hoshata. Again, if that's the case, somebody must have been standing on the ground passing it up, as Tosfos points out. So why don't we have our model for Hachnasa? Obviously, we can't use a model when it comes to Hotza'ah, unless we have an indication in a Pasuk that we're supposed to. And therefore, since over here, Moshitina Krashim Yizolazov, these Krashim weighing a couple tons apiece would not be all that easy to throw. And according to others, we wouldn't throw it anyway, as Kedushat HaMishkan. So, Avolo Zorkim, and that means that we're limited to learning it out the way that it occurred in this model.
Hamoshitayit is both of them?
No. One guy is, remember, according to Tosfos, the other guy's not even involved.
Passive.
He's completely passive.
But he is getting it.
Yeah, in the same way that the on his hand that was just sitting there is getting it. Mirta. Ask the Gemara. Now, wait a second over here. You're agreeing, all of you, that there is such a thing as Riga. Now, I don't know how you know it, but however you know it, it's got to be a tolda of Hotzah, isn't it? Says Rashi. It's very fascinating. Again, this is Rashi. Well, I mean, you know, what choice do we have? What else is it going to be? I mean, we don't list it separately. It's not similar to anything else. I guess the closest thing is Hotzah. Isn't that a strange thing to say? No. Because again, we're not really learning it out of Hotzah. So given that Zerika is a tolda of Hotzah, okay, where do we know? I mean, if we're making this kind of analysis, and it's interesting, we're waiting until here to even ask this question, which is unbelievable, but that's because of the specificity of the model. It's clear to the Gemara now, just as we explored this issue for the first time, the Gemara also is omed on this for the first time here. I mean, if you're talking about this, you're talking about something strange. In which case, how do I know that you can even use it as a model? Maybe it's just an insignificant event in the Mishkan. What makes it a malacha? You're saying it's a Tolda Hotzah, but how do you even know that Hotzah is a malacha just because it took place? Hotzah Gufa Hechaktiva, where does it say anything in the Torah that makes you make that jump into believing that the changes in spatial coordinates could possibly be a malacha? Omer Rabbi Yochanan, the Omer Kra, Vayitzav Moshe Vayaviru Kol B'machaneh. Now, where was Moshe standing? Moshe Ekanah V'yati B'machaneh Leviyah. The Machaneh Leviyah was basically the center square, so to speak, for the entire Machaneh, where everybody would come and meet with Moshe, ask the questions, bring, come to the Mishkan, and so on. So that's the ultimate Rishut HaRabim. And he's telling people, don't bring anything out of your homes any longer. So therefore, he's saying, Lo tafiku, don't go out of your homes, v'teitu, and bring from Rishut HaYachid Ditchu, from your personal homes where you're bringing all of these things to the Mishkan, Lit Rishut HaRabim. Now, wait a second over here. That's not what the pasuk means. I mean, I read that pasuk. That pasuk's talking about that they came, they told Moshe, there's too much material, we don't need anything else. Moshe sent a message and told people to stop bringing material. Now, you're turning it into something that has nothing. I mean, you're saying it has to do with Shabbos. Who said it even took place on Shabbos before? Maybe this is just a general idea. Ask them, or me. First of all, we might the Shabbat card. Well, who says this happened on Shabbat? Dilma b'chol kai. And the only reason he's telling them to stop it is b'shum d'shalima le'avedita. It's because all of the materials were completed. They didn't need anything else. I mean, that's what it says. Look at the context. K'dichtiv v'hamlacha hayta dayam. It says they had enough, doesn't it? Ah, see, that's an actual limud that this took place on Shabbat. And when Moshe was saying, don't you dare go out, he wasn't just telling them, thank you very much, but we don't need it. He's telling them, there's an Isser and you're going out. Who's that Isser and going out? So they were just talking about Shabbat. And the idea is that since it says, Vayaviru kol b'machaneh, we learn out that word ha'avara as being important because on Yom HaKippurim, the word ha'avara is the idea of the freeing on Yovel and so on. It says Vayaviru kol b'machaneh. And there's another call that is Muavar, and that is the Ve'ha'avarta Shofar Trua that announces the Geula of Yovel. And that's in Yom HaKippurim. So just like over there, Vayaviru kol b'machaneh, so just like the Ha'avarta kol Shofar Ma'ala Alan B'yom Asur, when it's telling you it's a day in which it's usher to do milakha, afkan b'yom asur, so too is today a day of isur milakha, and therefore that puts the context into Shabbat instead of simply into the question of whether we need what it is that you're bringing. Now, fascinatingly, the Rabbi Yochanan does not have any of this girsa about how do you know, maybe it was b'chol, and no, it was b'shabbos, we learned it out from Yom HaKippurim. The Rabbi Yochanan without this girsa has a beautiful pirush in the Gemara. He says, it has nothing to do with Shabbos. You're right. Who says it's Shabbos? It isn't Shabbos. This happened on Monday, maybe. But we can still learn from here that Hotzah is a malacha. What? Yes, he says, because look, it says, Ish v'isha al yasu od milacha l'trumat HaKodesh v'yichalei ha'am milavi. So you see that the Torah is defining lahavi as a malacha. That's brilliant. Why call it a malacha? Because I'm not doing anything. It should just say, al yitruchu, it's a tircha, I mean, whatever. It certainly is not a malacha. If the Torah calls it a malacha, it is a malacha. And that's it. And he brings that this is, in fact, the way the Yerushalmi learns it, without any need for a gzeirah shava of ha'avarako from Yom HaKippur. Now, this just tells me Hotzah, because it says the don't bring it here, that would be Hotzah to Rishut HaRabim. Again, I want to remind you that Taisus back on Daf Beis and this does us really an Erevin, which we'll be getting to Bezrat Hashem soon, where it brings over there the pasuk Al Yetzei Ish Mimekomo, and we dash in that to Al Yotzi. And Tosfos says, well, why would we need the two separate psukim? He says an amazing pshat. We need the two separate psukim in order to address the question of Oni and Ashir. Because, look, if the Mishnah found it necessary to describe where you are standing and give two completely different sets of otzah, one for an Oni and one for an Ashir, which again, when it comes to any other malach, what happens rolling on the ground, thinking that the Tana is insane. I don't understand. What possible difference does it make whether I'm hanging from the ceiling, I'm underneath the car, you got to tell me a malach of how to repair a car on Shabbos. It's different from someone who's repairing the underside of the car. Different if he's standing on top of the car and there's a separate Mishnah to talk about plugging in the computer. And what's the matter with you? Who cares where you stand? So since the Mishnah needs to do it, this to him is an indication why we need two separate circuits. And this is the ultimate Malacha Gerua idea. Not only the relationship of the chefetz to the spatial coordinates, but the relationship of the individual who's doing the Malacha on his own coordinates to the change that's going to be taking place in this, in the chefetz's coordinates. Okay, so here we talk about only one of these circuits. And we see that there's obviously an idea of Otsah. But now again, since Otsah is a Malacha Gerua, how do you know that Otsah should include Hachnasa? That's Ashkan Otsah, Hachnasa Minola. Well, that's already a Svara. I mean, if Lamaisa, the Torah is Makbet on Rishut or Rishut, so Mali Afuki Mali Yule? I mean, you can't, Bishleim, if you would have told me, mate, it's a different Rishut, I understand. But I mean, what's Nafkamina? If I'm taking it in or taking it out, clearly the Hakpada has to be the change in the coordinates, and then the change works in both directions. Miu Hotza'ah is the Ab, and Hakmasa is the Tolda, because that's the one that is mentioned, as we'll see. Now, as the Gemara, okay, let's talk about that terminology. One is the Ab, one is the Tolda. I mean, now I'm really confused, because this is a case in which we're deriving the given case, which is Otsah, to tell me about Hachnasa. Why do you use the word Av and Tolda? Does it really matter? Because you just used the word Tolda when it came to Zrika. Zrika was a Tolda of Otsah in a completely different way. I didn't learn Zrika out of Otsah. I simply stashed it under the rubric Otsah. I don't know if that is significant. I mean, I understand that the mucker of something is very significant, but I do not understand what the point is of stashing it under something, because it's the closest that you get. Is there an afkamina in calling something an av and a tolda? I mean, why can't we just have a list of the various things that are usher? So what's this av and tolda? Well, it's a big afkamina, of course, a big afkamina. Afkamina would be the iavik shtei avot bahari avali. If you had a mistake, you did two separate avot, or two toledot, for that matter, and different avot. You did them at the same time with forgetting that this thing was awesome. You'd be chayav two separate chataot, you're chayav on each one. Mashenkin, if you did the av, and then you did the tolda, even though they may be different, but they indeed come under one category of chatat, therefore you want to be chayav once. Therefore, we need to categorize them in this fashion. The Lamed Tet Malachot are a given, and as a given, we need therefore to have maximized the number of chataot and to understand which one is considered to be a separate category. Now, wait a minute, that's true according to Rabbanan. How about according to Rabbi Eliezer? This Nafkamina breaks down, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, he says you're chayev on doing a tolda even if it's under the same av. So what would be the point of calling it an av or calling it a tolda, huh? Well, hak to havi b'mishkan chashiva kari li'av, hak to lo havi b'mishkan chashiva lo kari li'av. Look, I mean, it's basically nomenclature. I mean, for purposes of definitions, of keeping our categories clear, the things that are mentioned in the Mishkan we call Av, or the things that are Choshev in the Mishkan, there's really two different Yusos here, Tosfos talks about them. Things that are Choshev in the Mishkan we view as Avot, from which, by the way, he derives, there may have been a lot of things that weren't Choshev in the Mishkan that aren't included. Let's say somebody's Mashkez Ra'im, you're Mashkez Ra'im, why don't we make that an Av? Again, the Choshev element of the Malacha includes the Av, and everything else is stuck under there. So the Mashkez Ra'im would be included under the Noteah, maybe, but it wouldn't be a separate Malacha. Okay. Or, you know what, maybe Inami Akta Ketiva. Or, I mean, look, when it came to Hotzah, it wasn't enough to find it in the Mishkan, right? Well, we needed to have a Pasuk for it. Okay, so then the Pasuk talks about the case of Hotzah, okay? That's why it becomes the Av. And Akmasa becomes the Tolda. Idolokativa Kari Tolda. So even if it's a function of naming, but nonetheless, I mean, what's going to define the name? Either the model in the Mishkan, or the Pasuk's mention of it. Tosafot says the only reason for us to include this second criteria was to include the Hotzah problem in our discussion. Because we certainly can't use the model itself, because we're not relying on the model. We needed the Pasuk. We have to throw this in order to explain why it is that we call Hotzah enough. Now, Hagitznan, you know, you've spoken about models, you've spoken about Psukim, but you've never spoken about this other black sheep of the family of Hotzah, which is carrying four Amos and Rishos around him, which is absolutely mad, because over there you haven't even changed the spatial coordinates in terms of any objective space. You're saying if something starts off at point A and I move it to point B, if point B is four hours away from point A, it's considered to be a change in spatial coordinates. That is totally crazy. I mean, you certainly haven't found anything like that that shows significance. Where did you get that from? And that was a Mishnah. I mean, it's not. Azorik Arba Amot Bekotel. We had this Mishnah before. Somebody throws four Amos Rishus Rabin, it lands, it splats, I should say. It doesn't land. If it lands, then you got the problem of what the Din of the Kotel was. But we said over there, it's talking about a Dvela Shmeina. You know, it's sticky. It lands on the face of the Kotel. So it's not considered to be a Mokka Basuyim to eat a different Rishus. Okay, so we said over there, if it's 10 fucking eyes, then it never landed in Rishus Rabin because it's in a Mokka Patur. So it's Kizoi Babir. If it's Lamat, I mean, I thought fucking, despite the fact that it's hanging there on the edge of the wall, it's considered to be Zorik Ba'aretz. And look, Zorik Ba'aretz, Arba Amos is Chayev. How do you know that? Zorik Arba Amos Pershut Rabbi, me know that to be Chayev. Where do you get it from? Omer of Yoshaya, look, it's got to be based on a model. In other words, given that there's such a thing as Hotzah, if we find a model like this in the Mishkan, so then the Pasuk would imply that it's significant. Let's say you have people that are being oreg yiriot, okay? Don't they have to throw their needles, zelazet? Excuse me? People that are weaving don't have needles, darling. Orgin machatin lama, what would they be doing with needles? Sorry. Amen. Shken tofrei yiriot. Now, people that are doing the embroidery on the yiriot of the Mishkan. So, I mean, didn't they throw their needles to each other? I mean, what if somebody else needed a needle? I'd say, hey, Joe! Or actually, Josette, throw me a needle! You know, so she would throw a needle, right? Well, no. I mean, maybe she was sitting right next to Carol. I mean, why would she have to throw it? Dilma Gabi Hadda, they have a Yasmin. No, you would never sit next to another lady that's doing the needling, because the next thing you know, she's needling you. So therefore, you have to keep your distance. So certainly, they weren't sitting next to each other. Dilma gabi adadei abiyas. You know, matu adadei mamachatayin. They don't want to needle each other. Okay, fine. So they're not right up next to each other. But where do you get arba amos? But come on, let's be reasonable over here. Maybe they were within four amos of each other. Elam rebchitzu. You know, let's go back to those orgim. Actually, that's where you got confused. It was talking about the people who were doing the work, the malacha rather, of weaving. There's no way to weave without throwing. Because you've got to throw the shuttle. Now, if I throw the shuttle to the guy on the other side, so then I'm going to be throwing it. Our bomb is pushing around it. There you go. Wait a minute. That's not called throwing. Because when you throw the shuttle is still attached to the thread that's connected to the other side. And we saw before, something is connected and it's not a free flight. It's not supposed to be Zorek. So what good is that? Malo Ogdobiado, you're still handling the piece of thread that's coming out from the Buchiak. Ah, indeed. But there's always that last throw, isn't there? And on that last throw, the thread runs out, and there goes the Buchiak finally into free flight, just like the shuttle. So there you have the Nischa Basra would be throwing in Rishut HaRabim. No, but it's not throwing in Rishut HaRabim. It's throwing through a weaving machine. What kind of Rishut HaRabim? It's throwing it across whatever had already been woven in the urea. That's not a Rishut HaRabim. That's a Mokum Ptur. It's not free passage. It's defined by other things that are hanging there. And that's not a Rishut HaRabim. Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, how about if somebody was doing the weaving of a urea needs to borrow a shuttle? And he says, I just crashed my shuttle. Can you lend me one? So she can orge yuriyot zorkin buchiar l'sho'aleya. Okay, so we have the same problem. How do you know that they weren't sitting next to each other? Oh, no. You'd never want to sit next to another guy. Because when he comes to the, after collecting it, he's got to give it a yank, you know. How about if he gives it a yank right into your ribs? You don't want that. And that's the edge. It's always yanked. So, dimamatu adari, ayatadari, no? We'd have the problem over here of bechefet, where at the edges. What's that called? Surge. The dilma shalchufi avi mishalchufi. Well, maybe they were smart enough to offset one from the other so you don't get poked in the ribs. Doesn't mean that you're four amas away from the guy. You're just offset from him, maybe by a foot. So why would that be good? And besides, who said that anybody would ever borrow a shuttle? As a matter of fact, I could show you that they never borrowed a shuttle. Mishi'ile me'adadi, did they borrow kelim one from the other? Vatanya Luda, I mean, gosh, even if you're a Luddite, you know that that didn't happen. Because the Luda said, Ish b'malachto asher ima osim. Everybody doing his own thing. That means that every individual was osik entirely in his own malacha and had no share in anybody else's malacha. So it was a very, very private and individual kind of enterprise. And therefore the pasuk is stressing the fact that I wouldn't want somebody else's shuttle. The two, besides which, even if this would be a good model, I mean, it would be Zorek. How do you know if you carry across Rishut Rabim that you're chayav? Ela, kol arba amot Rishut Rabim, gemora gemirima. Basically, the approach of almost all of the Mefarshim is that for amot Rishut Rabim is a Kabbalah as the definition of a space. A unique space is a space of Arba Amot. We find this for many, many issues. And indeed, it's interesting that recent research indicates that psychological space is also approximately Arba Amot. And you know that you begin to exhibit stress systems when people enter into your Arba Amot, which is the way the Gemara measures personal space. There's something about the Arba Amot. Once that's true, then we apply all the dinim of Hotzah to going from, because otherwise you could say, and there are, by the way, some who suggest, maybe you don't have the other dinim of Hotzah when it comes to Arba Amos, Bereshis Rabim, which is a different category, because they misunderstand this to mean there's a Kabbalah, Halacha Rishon Sinai, that Arba Amos, Bereshis Rabim is us. That's not the point. It's not that there's a new malacha called Arba Amos, Bereshis Rabim, in which case, how do you know you need Akira? How do you know you need Anofa? How do you know Shlaim Shasu? And so on and so forth. Maybe all of these things don't apply. No, this is simply another example. It's the equivalent of Big Mutzi, Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaYachid. Rushat Rabi. Okay. Amar Rav Yonah Amar Shmuel. Mekoshesh. You should know that the Mekoshesh, what did he do wrong? Never even says what he did. It says they found a big Mekoshesh Eitzim. The guy sounds like he's basically an innocent. What was he doing? Ah, he was carrying. So, did he bring that Rushat Rabi? I didn't have to. He carried it Arba Amot Rushat Rabi. The Braita said, no. Mekoshesh Eitzim means he was collecting those Eitzim from the ground. So he was pulling them out of the ground. Rabbi Yaakov says, no, he found them on the ground. It was driftwood from before the last ice age. And what he did was, he was ma'amer. He was collecting little pieces of wood, and that's Emor, and therefore he would be chayakas ma'amer. Frankly, gentlemen, what do we care what the Mekoshesh was doing? L'may nat kamina. I mean, we usually have a rule, ma'ida have havi. You know, once it's past the millennia, we can actually just ignore the details. This is quite some time ago, this Mekoshesh. The nafkamina is nafkamina la halacha. Famous vice we had earlier about Rav. The Omer Rav matzati migilat starim be rebifia. I found a secret document. And we said then, according to Rashi, the meaning of a Megillat Starim is that it's secret because you're not allowed to have a document to teach Torah Shabbal Peh. It doesn't mean that I'm trying to keep it secret. And in it said, Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Avot Melachot Arba'im Chaser Echad. That there's 39 Melachot, Ve'ino Chayav Melachot, but you only Chayav on one of them. What? Now what is that supposed to mean? Achad Betulo, Vatznam, Avot Melachot Arba'im Chaser Echad. We've been through this many times before. We know that the Mishnah says that there's 39 Melachot. We know that we asked on that Mishnah, we know how to count ourselves. And Minyan Alomali. And we know Rabbi Yochanan's famous answer, which is that She'ima Sam Kulam Behelam Echad, Chayava Kola Chapi Achat. This is coming to tell me the maximum number of Chataot that you could be Chayav for doing different Melachot. How could Isi Ben Yehuda come out of left field and claim that if you do all the Melachot, you'd be Chayav only one? Therefore, we're going to have to change this Megillat Starim to read Ema Eno Chayav Alachat Mehem. There's one of them that you're not chayav on, meaning you're not chayav mitah, nothing to do with the question of maximum number of chataot, and that there's only an isur karet on one of these melachos. Which one? We don't know. Now, Rabbi Yehuda is pshitele da'amavir chayav. Rabbi Yehuda just comes here, look, the mekoshesh, when it says the mekoshesh, he was a ma'avir. And the ma'avir, therefore, obviously is chayav nisa, because that's what they did to the Mekoshesh. You can exclude the Hotzah from this question of what was he referring to. It wasn't Hotzah. In the Braita, it was Tolesh, because the Braita was certain that Tolesh is Chayav. Rebaka Bar Yaakov, he was Pshitalei that a Ma'amer is Chayav Mita. Okay. But look, each one is coming to tell you which cases are we not misupak about as being the case of the Mekoshesh. Which brings us directly to the notes of Chad and our Parsha, which we could safely leave to tomorrow now that you see it.
What are those words named
Mekoshesh? Amavir?
Didn't have
a
what
were
they
matra? Obviously, the guys who gave him atra must have given him a good atra. They knew. Tosus asks, why don't we say before, by the way, the nafkaminis for atra? You say, what's nafkaminis you call it an atra at all? He needs to give atra in order. That's a good point. Tosus, maybe that's included in what the Gemara is saying. In other words, okay, so, but which one is the av, which one is the toladami? Certainly, you know. All right, gentlemen, that was exciting.